Okay, so we're learning Shoftim Perek Daled, and we discussed last week, we ended off with the battle, it wasn't much of a battle, but the battle between Barak and Sisera, and we ended on, I think the last Pasuk we did was Pasuk Tes Zion, I believe. All right, so Pasuk Tes Zion was, I think, the last Pasuk we did.
That the Assyrians had.
Right.
And I said, but Deborah had the 900 chariots, you know, and that was the big strategy.
Sisera had the 900
chariots.
Sisera had the 900 chariots. So he came way before the Assyrians moved into
right.
the field, you know, so then you have to give him credit for the chariot strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
Why chariots but, were around?
You see how small Baal is?
Oh, yeah. So basically, we learned last week that there wasn't even much of a battle, and this was Pasuk Tesvav, that basically Hashem, you know, as many of the battles here went, Hashem, you know, basically did something miraculous. Vayoham Hashem es Sisera, that he scared Sisera and the entire army, and we said that the Mefarshim said that either, you know, because Baruch Hu created some sort of loud sound that sounded like a whole army was approaching. And Sisera and his men got scared. They thought that Barak and the army was a little force. And now they hear all this commotion. And he got scared, and everybody fled. He fled, and all the troops fled. And then Pasuk Tezayin, we said that that everybody ran, they retreated. They ran back towards Haroshes Hagoy, which was the place where they came from. And the Pasuk says that Lo Nishar Ad Echad, the Jewish army killed everyone, right? With one exception. That's how we ended off last week, with one exception, and that was Sisera himself. And that's really Pasuk Yud Zayin. So let's see Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Sisera nas beragla velohel yael eshes chever hakeni, and Sisera, he alone on foot, right? He escapes. And again, the contrast here, the on foot is important because we were so focused on all the chariots before, right? He had 900 rechev barzel. That this was a very powerful army. You know, and all of a sudden, you know, he's coming on foot. If you remember, even before the battle, the Psukim described that Barak came on foot. So here the roles are reversed. That's it. They abandoned them, I guess. Maybe the Jewish army commandeered them. You know, we don't know what happened to them. You know, maybe they took them back with them. Who knows? You know, the Psukim don't say exactly what happened with the chariots. But either the Jewish army took them, or maybe the Sisera's army took them back with them, and they just retreated with the chariots. But either way, Sisera was on foot. Right, which is a role reversal here, because originally Barak was on foot. So now Sisera comes on. It's just interesting if you look at Pasuk Yud, Vayazik. Just look back at Pasuk Yud for a minute. Vayazik Barak and Zvulun v'es Naphtali Kedsha. So Barak goes and recruits the people from Zvulun and Naphtali. What does the Pasuk say? Vayal Baraglov. He comes on foot. Right, and one of the things we said was this was a contrast. The Mefarshim said this was a contrast to Sisera, that Sisera had all this manpower and chariots, and Barak had nothing. He just had his legs. And here it's the role reversal in Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Sisera nas beraglav. Now Sisera's on foot. Right, everything is reversed because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this miraculous victory. So where does he run? He runs el ohel Ya'el eshes chever hakeni. So he runs to the tent of Ya'el, the wife of Chever Hakeni. Why? Ki shalom bein Yavin Melech Hatzor ubein Beis Chever Hakeni. Because there was peace. There was a peace treaty, a peace accord between Yavin Melech Hatzor, that was Sisera's king, right? That was Melech Kenan, and Beis Chever Hakeni, and the household of Chever Hakeni. And this brings us back, right? If you remember, we had a pasuk that was a little bit, almost seemed almost out of place when we first learned it. But Pasuk Yud Aleph, right after the one we just read. If you go back to Pasuk Yud Aleph for a minute, so that's when the Navi introduced the Chever HaKeni Nifrod Mikayin Mibnei Chovav Chosei Moshe. That Chever HaKeni was the brother who separated himself. He lived apart from the other brothers, and we mentioned here that this was intentional. Right? They had this peace treaty, and basically the Radak explains that all the soldiers fled, all of Sisera's soldiers fled back. Right, they went. They retreated. They went back home towards Haroshes Hagoyim. Sisera realized that if he went back to Haroshes Hagoyim, he would have no chance. Right, and he says because the Jewish army is chasing them, they're going to kill everyone. Right, and once he realized that this was a miraculous victory, he realized he had no chance. So he said, I'm not going back with them to Harosh HaSagoyim. I'm going to get killed. So therefore, he slunk off to the side. Right? He went off to the side himself. His whole army retreated back to Harosh HaSagoyim. Sisera sneaks off to the side, you know, by himself. And he figures, listen, I'll find an ally. Right? Chevra Akeni is an ally. Right? They're at peace with Melech Kenan. So let me find an ally and I'll hide here until all the commotion dies down, until the war is over, and then I'll come out. Right? So let me hide here. He wants to hide out. Okay. So it's interesting. The Malbim, you know, questions what's about to happen. We all know what's about to happen, but I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but Yael's about to kill Sisera, right? So if I spoiled it, I'm sorry. Okay? So Yael kills Sisera. I feel like, you know, that everybody knows. So the Malbim asks, how is she allowed to do that? If the Pasuk says that they were at peace, they had a peace treaty, I mean, that's a pretty serious violation of a peace treaty, right? To kill the general of the other army. You know, that's like number one violation. So how can Yael, who's Eishes Chever HaKeni, and we just read that there was Kishalom ben Yovin Melech HaTzovein Beis Chever HaKeni, there's Shalom, there's peace. So how could Yael even have done this? So that's the question of the Malbim. Putting whose family in danger?
Her, Yael's family in danger.
Why?
The enemy of Bnei Yisrael over there, and yeah, they're looking for the guy.
Aha. Okay, interesting. So Erwin's suggesting maybe it was like Pikuach Nefesh, because she felt, listen, if Sisera's here, that means that, you know, the Jewish army, as soon as they realize that Sisera's not there with all the other troops in Harosh HaSagoyim being slaughtered, right, they're going to come looking for him. So if he's by us, they're going to come looking for him. That puts us in danger. Right, that puts us in danger. So that's a nice, interesting approach.
Maybe this peace between the two families should never have happened to begin with, because they were supposed to wipe out the
Canaanim. Right.
So she really didn't.
Maybe there shouldn't have been peace to begin with. Even though this family, it seems, it's not clear from the Mefarshim. It seems like they weren't really Jewish. You know, it seems like they were kind of, you know, they observed Jewish rituals, like some of the Mefarshim say, they kept like the minhagim of the Jews, but they weren't 100% Jewish. Like, they didn't convert. It sounds like they didn't convert. You know, they weren't Jewish. You know, they were just, you know, they kept like the, you know, they were from the family of Yisro, so they, you know, they were like cousins, you know, so they kept Jewish style, you know, like kosher style. But maybe, it could be that they weren't bound by that obligation to rid Eretz Canaan, you know, of the Canaanite. But that's also a nice shot. The Malbim has two approaches. He suggests that number one, he says maybe the fact that Pasuk Yud Aleph, where we learned that Chever HaKeni separated from his brothers, so he says that it's possible that once he separated from his brothers, he may not have been bound. I mean, this family might have been specifically, you know, out of the treaty, even though the Pasuk says, Ki Shalom en Yavi Melech HaTzor Ben Beis Chever HaKeni. But the Malbim says maybe the same treaty didn't apply to them. Because once they were separated from everybody else, they were like separated from the clan, they lived apart, so now they're not really bound by that same treaty that the rest of the family is bound by with Melech Kenan. That's one suggestion that he gives. And which explains why in Pasuk Yud Aleph we have this introduction that the Beis Chever HaKeni lives apart from his other brothers. Because that's important according to the Malbim, because that lays the foundation for Yael coming and killing Sisera. Otherwise, she wasn't able to do that. That's one interpretation. Another suggestion he gives is that the treaty was only with the men. Nobody ever had a Havamina that one of their women was going to come and kill people. Right? And, you know, women didn't go to war. Women weren't warriors. So the treaty was that all the men would act peacefully with each other. Right? So great. So the Malbim says, maybe that's why Dafka here, Yael, was the one who killed Sisera and not her husband. Where was, you ever think about it, right? She's Asia's Chever HaKeni. Where was Chever HaKeni? Like, where was he? Like, he was out golfing? You know, like, where was the guy? So the Malbim suggests that maybe Chever HaKeni had his hands tied. He couldn't do anything because he was bound by the treaty, and therefore he couldn't go and kill Sisera. That was against the, you know, that would have violated the treaty. But his wife was never bound by it. The women were never included in the treaty because no one ever thought that a woman would kill some of their people. So that's why specifically Yael had to do it and not Chever HaKeni. So these are his two suggestions as to why she wasn't bound by the treaty. Okay, now it's interesting. So Sisera comes Elohel Yael Eishes Chever HaKeni. Now let's see Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayteitze Yael Likras Sisera. So Yael comes out of the tent to greet Sisera. So Sisera's not, he's not knocking on the door just yet. Right? It seems like he's hesitating. We'll see why in a second. Vatomere love, Sura Adoni, Sura Elai. She says, come, my master, come to me. Altira, don't be afraid, right? My famous last words, right? Okay, don't be afraid. Vayasar eleha ha'ohela v'atachaseu basmicha. And he's reassured by her. He's reassured by her, and he comes in, and she covers him with a blanket. The Metzudas David says, why was, you know, the Metzudas David said he was hesitating. We'll see why in a couple of psukim. We'll see why maybe he was hesitating. But it seems like he was hesitating outside. He wasn't sure if he should come in or not. And he wasn't sure. Maybe also he wasn't sure, you know, going back with this Malbim, maybe he wasn't sure. Are they at peace with us? Are they not at peace with us? This family of Chevra Cheni, you know, can I trust them? Can I not trust them? Yael comes out and she says, oh, Adoni, my master, please come. I'll take care of you. I'll protect you. And he sees, oh, the peace treaty. I see that you know, this is an ally. We're friends, right? I can trust her, and therefore I can come in and she'll hide me, and I'll be able to escape, you know, death at the hands of Barak and his army. He comes in, she covers him with his blanket. It's not clear. I mean, we'll see in a minute that she's trying to get him sleepy, right? Which we'll read about in a minute. But here, it almost could be about the chaseo basmicha, that it was like she covered him, almost like he was hiding. You know, not going to sleep. I mean, he was hiding. You know, she maybe, it's not clear in the mefarshim, you know, but maybe she threw like a blanket over him, you know, to just hide him so that if anybody would poke their heads in, they wouldn't see anything. Okay, pasuk yutes. Vayomer eleha hashkinina. So according to this, it sounds like, you know, she's hiding him. And then he realizes, you know, I'm a little thirsty. Okay, you know, he's think about it. He just came from battle. You know, he's tired, he's on the run, he's nas meraglav, he's running, he literally, physically running with his legs. You know, he's tired. Vayomer eleha hashkinina me'at mayim kitza meisi. So he says, please do me a favor, I'm very, very thirsty. If you can just give me a little water to drink. Vatiftach esnod hechalav vatashkei vatachasev. So famously, what does she do? She doesn't give him water, she gives him milk. She gives him milk. Why? As Rashi says, she gives him milk because, you know, a person has milk, has dairy, it can make them a little bit sleepy. So she's trying to get him a little sleepy, a little drowsy. He's exhausted as it is, keep in mind, right? He just came from battle, he's running, he's exhausted. Now she gives him the milk on top of that. Okay, she's trying to get him sleepy. And now, what does it say at the end of the pasuk? Vatashkehu vatechasehu. And then she covers him up again. Right, she gives him the blanket again. She's trying to get him to get nice and cozy and sleepy and go to sleep. Pasuk chaf, vayomer eleha amod pesach ha'ohel. So he's still a little nervous, right? So he feels confident, he feels comfortable that Yael's caring for him. She's hiding him, but he says, "Listen, they're gonna come looking for me, right? People are gonna come." So he says, "Do me a favor, stand by the door of the tent." If someone comes by and asks, right? If someone comes by and asks, is there a man in here? You'll say, no, nobody in here. Nobody in here. Okay? Now, you know, so the Malbim, he doesn't ask it explicitly, but he's very sensitive. You know, he's like sensitive to this. They're going to believe her? You know, like, is anybody hiding in here? No, nobody in here. Okay, you know, I mean, if they're looking for someone, you know, chances are they're going to come, they're going to search the tent. They're not just going to, you know, take her word for it, you know, that she's not harboring anyone. But think about the story with Rachav, if you remember back in towards the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. You know, they didn't just ask her, you know, is anybody hiding here? They went in, they came in, they looked for them, right? So they were hiding up in the loft under the straw or whatever, right?
This is a battle. It's supposed to be men in the battle. Why is a woman in the middle of the
battle? No. This is not the middle of the battle. The battle happened already, and now all the troops retreated, and Sisera escaped off to the side. Yeah, so he ran into a town. He ran into a town, and this was the first tent that he bumped into, Yael's tent.
Now,
yeah.
Did we mention before that this Yael?
Yeah.
Related to anything that says Canaan?
Yeah.
Yisro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's Pasuk Yud Aleph.
Oh, that's
Yisro. Yeah, but look back at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yeah, yeah. The Chever Akeni Nifrod Mikayin Mibnei Chovav Chosei Moshe. That's Yisro. Yeah, look back at Yud Aleph. That's also, I didn't think about that. Right, Yisro, when Moshe was running from Paro.
But he didn't kill him.
Who didn't kill who?
He could have. could have said, "Oh, you're I'm in danger." The same thing, like.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So the Malbim says something fascinating here. So he says that even he said at that time, it was not appropriate for a man to enter a woman's tent without other men present. Okay. Now I'm not talking about, you know, halacha here, right? We're talking about Sisra, right? Sisra. So he says that, but this was like the nimusim. This was the etiquette at that time. That even amongst the goyim, even amongst the Kananim, right? It was not appropriate to enter a woman's tent unless there were other men there. Now in this case, now the Malbim doesn't say this, but I think that this is probably why also Sisra was hesitating outside, right? Because he sees it's Yael's tent, but he doesn't want to go in because he doesn't know if that, you know, there's nobody else there. It's not appropriate. So finally she comes out and she says, it's okay. Like, you know, you're running for your life. You can come in. It's okay. Nothing's going to happen, right? So, you know, he hesitated outside because it wasn't appropriate for him to come in. And the Malbim says that that's why he says that if someone comes and asks, Hayesh po ish, who's the ish? The ish is not Sisra.
Anybody,
any man, right? They're not asking for Sisra. Of course, if they were searching for Sisra, they would come into the tent and they would turn the place upside down looking for Sisra, right? But they're just going to knock on the door and say, Yael's going to open the door and they're going to say, oh, is your husband home, right? Is there a man here? And she's going to say, no, there are no men here. And then they're going to know, oh, there's no men here. Sisra can't be here. He wouldn't have come into the woman's tent without any men here. So then they're going to turn away and they're going to go. Right?
Sisra, general, he was out to kill Bnei Yisrael.
Right.
He's going to worry about etiquette?
Yes.
He's an animal.
That's what the Malbim says. It's interesting, right? But that's what the Malbim says, that even at that time, it's clear he was hesitating outside the tent. The Malbim doesn't say. That's my addition. The Malbim doesn't say that.
I don't care what you tell me. They're not worried him so much about etiquette.
Well, it could be he was wondering, you know, which tent to go into. Maybe I should
think about it.
Either. You know, this is what he says.
Could be she killed him because he approached her.
Well, I mean, but he did hesitate. He didn't come. You know, she came out. She came
Once
out
he
to.
He was inside, getting comfortable. He thought, okay, maybe.
Well, maybe. Okay, we'll learn about that next week. That's going to be Pashup Shad in the Psukim. There's nothing about that, right? If you just read the Psukim here, there's nothing. There's no intimacy. There's nothing. Right? We'll learn in the Shiras Devora that there is some allusion to something which Chazal talk about. We'll talk about that next week when we get to the Shira. Sorry. It seems that this was like on the fly.
Right.
This wasn't a planned thing. I mean, listen, Sisra was running. He didn't have to come here. He just knocked on the door. I mean, he was close by.
But is she scared? Is that why she kills him?
It doesn't say she's scared. It doesn't say she's scared.
So what's her basis?
She didn't kill him. He didn't get
it. Well, what? Well, hold on.
Why would she even decide to kill him?
So again, it seems that she recognized, right? She knew who he was. And she knew what was going on. So it could be she recognized at this time, listen, whose side do I want to be on right now? Right? Meaning, he's fighting the Jews, he's fighting Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael are the ones that are being successful. You know, God is on their side. So, you know, I'd rather let me kill him and I'm going to be on the good team as opposed to helping him and being on the bad team. Right? So, but also, I mean, you know, again, keep in mind, it's all divinely inspired because this whole thing is miraculous. The whole battle is miraculous. The fact, we spoke about this fact last week, the fact that Yael, that even, you know, Sisra, one of the greatest generals of the time, his demise comes to the hands of a housewife. You know, the whole thing is miraculous, right? So there's all the Yad Hashem, you know, playing things out.
By himself is miraculous.
I'm sorry?
The fact that he's by himself with no other people with him. Like,
well, that also, yeah, right. Okay. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Oh, here's where it gets a little graphic. Vatikach Yael Eishes Chever Es Yesad HaOhel. So Yael, so Sisra is sleeping nice and comfy. And Yael takes the stake of the tent, right? S-T-A-K-E, right? Not the food, right? She takes the stake of the tent. Vatosem es hamakeves biyada. And she takes like the hammer, you know, in her other hand. Vatavo elav balot. She approaches him quietly. He's asleep. She approaches him quietly, Vatiska es hayaseid v'rakaso, and she hammers the stake into his forehead. Vatitznach ba'aretz, Pasuk says it went straight through his head into the ground, right? Straight through his head into the ground. V'hu nirdam v'yoaf hayamos. He was asleep when she approached, And then immediately, it sounds like he just died on the spot. Right? Immediately died on the spot.
What does
Vayyoaf
mean?
So Vayyoaf could mean like he, you know, like he fainted almost. You know, that's what you would, you know, usually that's what the word would mean. But in this context, it sounds like it's almost like off like a bird, like he flew, like it just immediately, you know, like immediately died. And immediately died.
Through the head could do that.
Yes, exactly, right? It's not so comfortable. So, and all the Mefarshim explain here that because he was asleep, that's why the Pasuk says she approached him quietly. Now, this was, you know, he was asleep, so that's what enabled her to be able to do this, okay? And it's interesting, some of them seem to say, I was wondering about this, some of the Mefarshim, the Malbim seems to imply this way, and others seem to imply this way, some of the Mefarshim seem to imply that because he was sleeping, he died quicker. Now, I don't know scientifically, if a person's body is asleep, right? If you're asleep and there's some sort of trauma to the body, you know, I don't know if is it more likely that a person will die as opposed to when you're awake and your defenses are up, so to speak? I'm not sure. Medically, I'm not sure about that. But some of the Mefarshim seem to indicate that since he was sleeping, his body was already relaxed. So then as soon as the stake went in, he just immediately died, you know, because whatever. But that's what some of the Mefarshim seem to say. Oh, then why? Because he's saying because he died instantly without he really didn't feel any pain, basically. That's interesting. I don't know what the, I don't think so. Yeah, positive thinker. I don't know. The Malbim also, you know, if you think about this, it's almost like anesthesia. I mean, the guy was exhausted, right? The guy was exhausted from battle, and she gives him the milk. She covers him with a blanket. I mean, he was out like a light. You know, and then she comes and just does this. The Malbim says, fascinatingly also, he says that this idea of the snake, vatitznach ba'aretz, right, that the snake driving straight through his head into the ground, so you could understand the pashup shot, you know, she gave a good zetz, and it just like went straight through. The Malbim says that this was also miraculous, because he says that this was a heavy stake. This wasn't like a little plastic stake. You know, this was like a heavy metal stake. And he says, honestly, he said, Yael really couldn't, physically, she didn't have the upper body strength to muster this kind of action. You know, to take a stake and to slam it through the guy's head. You know, like, how'd she have the ability to do that? So the Malbim says that this was really, really miraculous. Because the fact that she was even physically able to do this, right, was a miraculous thing. Besides for just the emotional courage to be able to, you know, to kill someone by driving a stake through their head, right? You know, the emotional courage to do that. But physically, she didn't have the physical strength to do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, helped her out. This was a miraculous thing. And he says, like, the stake almost, like, you know, the weight of the stake just, like, pulled it down into the ground. As soon as she hit it, you know, it just, like, miraculously just, you know, just went straight through his head into the ground. Okay. Now, Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vehine Barak Rodef Es Sisera. So Barak is running, he's chasing after Sisera, right? And here also the Ralbag says that Barak and the entire army chased the soldiers back to Haroshes HaGoyim when they retreated, right? They killed all the soldiers, and they realized Sisera's not here, right? They know Sisera, they know who the general is, and they look through all the corpses, they look through all the dead bodies lying there, and they see the general's not here, Sisera's not here. Where is he? Right? And they realize he must have escaped. So Barak goes back with his men. He goes back to find Sisera, right? They don't want to leave Sisera. They go back to find Sisera. So he comes and he retraces. He goes back. Vateitze Yael likraso. And he comes nearby, near this town. Yael comes out of the tent to greet him. Vatomer lo lech ve'ereka es ha'ish asher ato mevakesh. You're looking for someone? Let me show you. Right? Come into the tent and I'll show you the man that you're looking for. Vayavo eleha v'hine Sisera nofel meis v'hayose berakaso. And she comes, he enters the tent, and he sees Sisera, the great general, lying there, right? Lying there in the tent with this stake in his head.
Rabbi, yeah. It says here that she tried to seduce Sisera.
Yeah, okay, so we'll,
that's a tremendous sin, but she did it for the sake of Hashem.
Yeah, good. So again, if you look in the Psukim, you see nothing of that. Right, it doesn't say that anywhere in the Pesukim. We're going to talk about that more next week, because next week we'll learn the Shira, which is Perek Hey. We might start it tonight if we have time to just begin it. But in the Shira, in Perek Hey, there are some allusions to that. So we'll talk about it a little more then. Okay. So Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayachna Elokim Bayom Ahu Es Yovin Melech Kenan Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. And that was it, right? Once that battle happened, Sisera's done. Sisera, you know, all the troops got killed, and Sisera himself was killed. So that was it. The Yavin Melech Kenan was subdued before Bnei Yisrael, and things stayed quiet. You know, things stayed quiet once he was defeated. Vatelech Yad Bnei Yisrael Haloch V'Kasha. This is Pasuk Chaf Dalid Al Yavin Melech Kenan. Ad Asher Yichrisu Es Yavin Melech Kenan. And it sounds like almost like the Mitzvah Stavit said they tightened their grip. You know, Bnei Yisrael had regained control. Yavin Melech Kenan was no longer a factor. His general and entire army had just been wiped out, so he was powerless essentially, right? And Bnei Yisrael regained control. They subdued him even more. It sounds like, and that's it. He was essentially eliminated. I mean, he wasn't killed. He was still alive, but he was essentially out of the picture. The Malbim points out that if you look, it's just back in Pasuk Chav Gimel. So it says Vayachna Elokim Bayom Hahu Es Yavin Melech Kenan. So why does it say Bayom Hahu? Because this was only temporary. Yavin Melech Kenan is going to come back, right? So for now, Yavin Melech Kenan was subdued. He lost his army. He lost his general. He's powerless. He's out of the picture. But he's going to come back again. He's going to come back with renewed strength and with new power. But really, throughout the time of Devorah's lifetime, things stayed quiet, right? The Malbim says here also, things stayed quiet until she died. Okay, now let's begin. We have a few minutes, so let's begin Perek Hey. And we'll begin just with a basic introduction. And as we know, Perek Hey is the Shira, Shiras Devorah. If you look at it, even if you look at it in, at least in this Navi, they have it. It looks like Az Yashir, and it looks like the Shiras Hayam. It has that structure to it of the, you know, spacing. Exactly the spacing of Az Yashir. It's a Shira. Right? Chazal said this is the structure of a song. And as we know, we lane this as the Haftorah of Parshas B'Shalach. When we lane Parshas B'Shalach, which is the Shiras Hayom, so we lane this Perakei, which is Shiras Devorah, we lane this as the Shira. Yeah.
Could you just go back after?
Yeah. Right.
Vayogo Eleho.
Yeah.
Isn't that terminology that's used?
Yes.
Oftentimes
like intimacy. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So where is that?
Yes. That's a good question. None of the Mefarshim say anything. Nothing that I saw. I didn't see anything about that. It's a good question though, because that is generally that language does often imply some sort of intimacy. It would be strange though, because, you know, obviously, you know, as we've learned, Barak was married to Devorah, so it would be strange that this would, you know, he would have some sort of intimate encounter here. I don't know. I don't know if Chazal. I don't know if there's any midrashim about this. I'm not sure. I didn't see anything in the Mefarshim about it. But there may be a midrashim. I'm not sure. If I see anything, I'll let you know. But it's a good observation, because often that language does imply that. Okay, so here we have the beginning of Perek Hey. Right off the bat, we start Vatoshar Devorah uVarak ben Avinoam Bayom Hahule Mor. We have Devorah and Barak ben Avinoam. They sing this song, right? On this day, Bayom Hahu, they sing this song Lemor, right? They sing this song, you know, to say, so to speak. And the question is, you know, what exactly is this Shira all about? It's interesting that here, you know, this is Perek Hey of Sefer Shoftim. We've learned about a lot of battles. Right? A lot of battles. And, you know, throughout Sefer Yehoshua, we had battles as they conquered Eretz Yisrael. Right? Here, even in Sefer Shoftim, we've had already, this is not the first Shoftim, we've had already a couple of Shoftim where they've been victorious over the nations that have tried to persecute us. So why dafka here do we have this Shira? Right? Was this battle so much more miraculous than the other battles?
She was a woman,
okay, and
therefore we didn't have anybody of her stature. We only had male.
So you're saying because it was a woman, so therefore...
Therefore they made a Shira.
They made a Shira. Right.
Kalisha.
Yeah.
They have Miriam also doing the Shira.
Miriam. We find the Shira of Miriam, right. Yeah. But it's interesting, you know. I mean, you know, I mean, you're right. There's a woman here involved here, but you know, the fact that Dafka you should have a shira. Also, it says Barak ben Avinom was also involved in the shira. It wasn't just the voter of shira. Yeah, I understand, but I'm just saying it wasn't. You know, if the shira was just coming from her, so you know.
They call it shira's
devora. Yeah, we call it shira's devora, right? But the pasuk says clearly, right? Vatosha devora Barak. But yeah, so it's an interesting question. Why exactly do we have this shira right here? And in fact, it's interesting. The medrash, there's a medrash that says that it's a medrash in Shir HaShirim that says that there are 10 songs, 10 shirim that have been there are 10 shirim in general. 9 of them have already been sung, and there's one that's going to be sung by, at Yemos HaMashiach when Mashiach comes, right? And one of them is Adam Arishon when he sang Mizmor Shirli HaMashabas after he did tshuva after the chait, he sang Mizmor Shirli HaMashabas. That was one. Az Yashir obviously is one. David HaMelech sang a song. Another song in the Midbar, Shir HaShirim is considered a song. Ha'azinu is considered a song. So we have several songs throughout the Torah, throughout Tanakh. And here we have all of a sudden we have this shira here. So there's a Rabbi Yitzchak Kirzner. I've quoted him in the past, and he suggests here, you know, specifically by Shiras Devora. He suggests that what Shira is really all about is recognizing Kavod Shamayim in the world. When we recognize the glory of Hashem in this world, that's when we sing Shira. Now, why specifically this battle? So he goes back to a Malbim. There was a Malbim that said earlier at the beginning of Perek Dalet, when we were describing, you know, Yavin Melech Kenan's grip over Bnei Yisrael and Sisra, you know, the great general, and his power and grip over Bnei Yisrael. So the Malbim says that Sisra, when he would come out b'cherufin v'gidufin. That Sisra would be blaspheming. He would be cursing God as he came out against the Jews. So this was his mantra. It wasn't just, you know, let's kick the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael so we can have their land. It wasn't just about the land, right? This was a religious battle. Sisra and Yavin saw this as a religious battle. This is something that they came out against Hashem. And the way they fought against Hashem was by fighting Bnei Yisrael. So this wasn't just a territorial thing, it was a religious thing. They were blaspheming and cursing God as they were coming out and persecuting the Jewish people. And therefore, says Rabbi Kirzner, so therefore, specifically with this victory, when the persecution of the Jewish people was so religious in nature, was so anti-God in nature, and now we have this miraculous victory, there's no greater, you know, Kavod Shamayim that comes into the world as this. Right? And he says, if we think back to the other most prominent Shira, which is Shiras Hayom, Oz Yashir, it's a similar thing. Right? Paro, what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu Aaron comes to Paro, right? And he says, Hashem said, let the people go. What does Paro respond? Who's this Hashem? Right? Who's this Hashem that I should listen to? So it wasn't just, you know, a slavery thing. This was also an anti-God. This was an anti-religion. This was, you know, I don't know about your God that you're talking about. I don't believe in this God. I don't have to follow this God. And now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes them out, Benisim Beniflaos, Hashem takes them out with the Eser Makos and the Kriyas Yamsuf, and everyone in the world sees God right in front of their faces. Oh, this is Kvot Shamayim. This is, you see, everybody saw the glory of God. Oz Yashir Moshe. That's what Moshe has to sing. That's when Moshe sings his song. And it's interesting. He says that that if you look at the pasuk, what does the pasuk say? The pasuk we just read, the first pasuk, that they sang Bayom Hahu Leimor. Now, what's Leimor? So many of the Mefarshim grapple with the Leimor, because Leimor usually means that someone is saying, you know, someone else should say something. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Leimor. Hashem spoke to Moshe to say that Moshe should now say this. Moshe should speak to Aaron, should speak to Bnei Yisrael, whoever Moshe was commanded to speak to. But there's always a follow-up conversation when it says Leimor. Who's this Leimor here? Right? Barak and Devorah are singing. So that's it. They're singing. So what's the Leimor? So some of Farshim say Leimor means that they were singing and Bnei Yisrael was supposed to respond to the song. It was like a responsive song. So they sang and then Bnei Yisrael would repeat after them. That was the Leimor. I saw one interpretation in the Mefarshim that says that Leimor means, the Al-Sheikh, I believe, says this, that Le'emor means that they sang this song now, and they're going to sing it again after Tchiyas HaMeisim. And he brings a Chazal also that says the same thing with Uz Yashir Moshe. Why is it Yashir in the future tense? Yashir, because Moshe sang the song now, but when Mashiach comes, Moshe is going to sing the song again. We're going to have an Az Yashir again, because again we're going to see Kivot Shemaim. We're going to see the glory of Hashem again in this world. Says the Al Sheikh, that's exactly what's happening here. Devorah and Barak are singing this song. Vatosha Devorah Barak ben Avinoam b'yom ahu, but it's also Le'emor. It's also going to be after Tchiyas HaMeisim. It's also going to be in Yemos HaMashiach. That's also when it's going to be sung. But Rabbi Kirzner suggests something a little bit different, and he says that what's the Le'emor? He suggests that maybe the Le'emor is the fact that we have a custom to say this Shira every year, Parshas B'Shalach, right? That's our minhag, minhag Yisrael, is that we sing this Shira when we lay in the Haftarah for Parshas B'Shalach. Each and every year, we sing the Shira again. So Devorah and Barak sang the Shira by Yom Hahu, but it's Le'emor. They wanted B'nai Yisrael to continue singing this song, and we do it each and every year. Why? Again, because we're tapping into that Kavod Shemaim. Every time we relive the Shira, we sing the Shira Sayam, Az Yashir Moshe, we go through the Shira of Devorah, Vatarsha Devorah of Arak Ben Avi Noam. Every year we tap into this, and we remember the Kavod Shemaim, the glory of Hashem that was so evident, that was so clear in this world. And in fact, there's another Mamar Chazal that says that anyone who sings Shira in Olam Hazeh, in this world, will be Zoche to sing Shira in Olam Haba. Right? So what's that all about? What does that mean? If I sing Shira in this world, I'll be zochet to sing Shira in Olam Haba. So what's the idea? So Rabbi Kirzner explains with the same theme. That singing Shira in Olam Haba means that I'm going to be zochet to Olam Haba to see the clarity of Hashem. That's what we're all looking for. Right? Olam Haba, when Mashiach comes, everything's going to be clear. Hashem is going to be evident to everyone in the world. That's what we want. That's what we're looking for. How do we get to that? By singing Shira in this world. The more we sing Shira in Olam Hazeh, the more we look out for Kavod Shemaim, the more we search in this world for the presence of Hashem, the more we're going to be zocha to see the clarity of Hashem's existence, of Hashem's glory in Olam Haba when He comes. La'asi lavo. When Mashiach comes, the more we're going to be zocha to see that. So that's what this is really all about. And in fact, he points out, if you look at the very beginning, and of course we'll come back to some of the psukim in Perek Hay, but if you look at the very beginning of Perek Vav, what does the pasuk say? Vayasu, after the Shira, right? After Devorah, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael hara b'nei Hashem. So again, we restart the cycle of b'nei Yisrael doing evil in the eyes of Hashem. But here, it's interesting, because it doesn't say Vayosifu. Often it says Vayosifu, that they continue to, they added on to what they did. Here it says, no, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael. Why? Because this is something new. They had a kapara. When they sang this Shira, Vatasha Devora Uvarak Ben Aminoam, and it was Le'emor, B'nei Yisrael participated, they had a clean slate. It was Vayasu, right? They had a clean slate. Everything was good. Now they slipped back. Vayasu, it's something new. It's a new chait. It's not the same cycle again, right? They're not just tapping back into that same pattern. This is something new. It's a new pattern because their slate was wiped clean. It was a totally clean thing. And I'll share one last thought before we break for the night. So here also it says Bayom Hahu, beautiful thought from the Yalkut Me'am Loes. Right. So what does the Me'am Loes say? What does it say? Bayom Hahu. That day they sang Shira. So often what happens? Something happens in our life and we're inspired. Right? We're inspired by an event. We're inspired by something we hear, something we see, something we experience. We're inspired. And what do? And we think about it. Oh, it's unbelievable. And then we go back to our life. And then a day later, where's the inspiration? Gone. So what did they do? Devorah and Barak were inspired. What did they do? Vatoshar. They sang. And they sang a song that we now sing for eternity. Which means they took their inspiration, they were inspired by the miraculous victory. Hashem was so clear, was so evident in their lives. Vatoshar, they put it down onto paper. Right? They did something with it. They took that inspiration, they concretized it. Bayom Hahu, that day. That same day that they were inspired, they sat down and they did it. Right? It says the Yalkut Me'am Loes that this is the limud for us when we're inspired by something to do something by Yom Hahu. To take something and to do it by Yom Hahu. You hear all these people, you know, we're having the Siyum Dafyomi soon, January 1st, right? It's going to be the Siyum Dafyomi. So people start Dafyomi. Why? Because something happened. They got inspired and they just started. And then they go until they finish. Right? So often we accomplish great things when we're inspired. And then we take that inspiration and put it, Lamaisa, put it into our lives, concretize it, and bring something to fruition. And that's exactly what they did, and that's the lesson for us. We'll stop here for tonight. Mirza Hashem, next time, I think next week, I think...